You're listening to UK Health Radio, where health means more than the absence of illness. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. I'm Hillary Burns, and each week we explore honest conversations about life, health, and whole person well-being through real stories of resilience, healing, and human connection. This is the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. His name is Anderson Manuel, and he is a teacher in Sudbury, Mass. He's starting his 28th year of teaching. He has two sons and a wife, and he's going to talk to us all about what he's doing in his classroom, some other good stuff. So welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am flattered and I am honored to be here.
Good. All right. So where did you grow up and how did you get into teaching? What had you follow that path? I'm always curious.
Oh, well, it is a long story, but I'll make it short because I know we only have a short time. I was born and raised in Haiti. I came here when I was about 11 years old. So I grew up in Massachusetts and I grew up in the church community. And I've always been involved with kids. But people have always told me, wow, you have these connections with kids. This is something you should pursue. But coming from the Caribbean, my parents always wanted us to achieve higher. And my goal was to become a corporate lawyer. So when I worked hard throughout my years and then made it to college and then when I got accepted to Boston College, something unusual happened. I got involved in student government and I started this after school program for inner city kids where I went through the whole writing grant process where I met with professors, specifically people from the School of Education. And I worked closely with them and we put together this program. And from freshman year until I graduated college, I was very involved in running that program. And people always say, oh my God, you'd be amazing as a teacher. And I said, nope, I'm going to become a corporate lawyer. And then after I graduated with a marketing and finance degree and I wanted to go into law school and then Boston College, one of my professors that I work with called me and he told me, listen, Boston College is trying to get more male teachers involved in the elementary school program. And they have this grant available. If you would apply, you never know. Maybe you might get it and you might want to go into teaching. And I'm like, okay, I'll apply. I'll see what happens. And 2 weeks later, I got into the program and I was given a grant to go for my master's in education. And it's the best decision that I made because that summer, I was working with a group of people who were lawyers and I did not like them very much. And I was like, I don't know if that's something that I want to go to. My dad was like, no, you pursue that goal. You pursue that dream. You've already gotten accepted to a few law schools. You just need to pick one. And I'm like, I don't know. And then something said to me, go, you know what I mean? You can always go back to law school if you hate teaching. You can always, because you've already been accepted to a few schools, you'll be able to make it there. And I said, all right, I followed my heart and I went back to Boston College and it's been the best decisions that I've ever made. I love being around teachers. I loved everything about it. So that's how my journey started coming.
What were you doing with lawyers? Like, were you working at a law firm or you just happened to come? I was
working in a summer program that was preparing me to go to law school where I wanted a head start. I wanted to basically, it was a summer program where I worked as an intern and I was helping people find books and I was helping, just hang around people. I wanted to get a feel for it, of what it was going to be like. And none of the people were nice. Mm. They were very cold, they were not kind people. So I said, these are not my people.
Was it in a law firm? Were you actually in a law firm?
It was at a law school. It was at Suffolk Sigma okay. program. And that was divine, divine guidance.
Yeah. Well, you saved some money.
I saved
a lot of money, a lot of aggravation.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how I got into education, and it's the best decision that I've ever made. I've loved everything that I've been involved in and growing as an educator, and it's been the best decision I've ever made.
Wow. Okay. So after your master's, you got your master's at BC, and then where did you go from there? Did you get a job right away teaching?
No, because I had a marketing and finance degree at the time when I graduated from college, there were no teaching jobs available. So because I had, ever since I was 15 years old, I was always involved in the restaurant business. So while I was at Boston College, the restaurant that my dad was a chef at, I worked there, and I've worked there for a long time, and they were looking for weekend managers. So I was like getting my master's, I became a restaurant manager. And then after, I couldn't find a teaching job, but because I had that knowledge, I became a restaurant manager. I worked for I worked in the restaurant industry, and I worked for Bertucci's. I became a general manager for Bertucci's. And then one day, while I was in the restaurant, these people came in, and I just started a conversation with this guy. And basically, he was having dinner. And then he says, how long have you been a manager? And I said, you know, I just became a general manager for this restaurant. But really, I'm waiting until an opportunity opens up, as you know, in the teaching field. And he says, where did you go to school? I said, I went to school at Boston College. And he goes, oh, really? I got my doctorate at Boston College. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. And he goes, what did you get your degree? And I said, I got my degree in early childhood and administration. And he went, early childhood? And I said, yes, I want to become, I'm certified in kindergarten to third. And he looked at me, he goes, I am a principal and I'm looking for a kindergarten and a kindergarten teacher. And I said, and if you would like, I would love to offer you.
Pick me.
Yeah, I would love to offer you, an opportunity to come in for an interview. And I went in for an interview and I got the position. So it is very important that, you know, the power of being able to build relationship with people and never being able to introduce yourself is one of the skills that I learned early on, that sometimes a conversation could lead to somewhere. That's the reason why I'm always willing to talk to anybody, because I've learned from experience that when you take a time to get to know people and to just talk to people and be friendly with people, many amazing things can happen. And this guy was God sent, because I did not like my job as a general manager. I did it for a year and a half, and you know, it was paying really well, but I was not happy. And this guy brought me happiness and joy, and he offered me the job right away. And I started as a kindergarten teacher in Charlestown, Massachusetts. And I did that for 5 years. So that's how my journey started. Into the teaching and the teaching field by basically talking to this guy. And if I did not talk with him, the doors would have never been opened.
Wow. It's amazing. Yes. Did you love kindergarten? Did you like the kids? Gosh. Yes.
I loved it. I had 27 kids and I was by myself. But what was great about in the early 1990s, the focus was on a lot on play. So I had a piano in my classroom because I'm also a musician and a singer. So I was able to sing with the kids. I had this big old room where I had different centers and play with them, took naps with them. It was great. And I taught them how to read and how, it was just like a wonderful experience. And I had some wonderful mentors. And this guy was really, he really wanted me to be successful. So he surrounded me with a group of people who really cared about me and really molded me into the teacher that I was today. And one of the things that happened is that he really wanted me to stay in the teaching field so bad. Because when you go into the teaching field, there are some, depends on who you work for, you have to wait 3 to 5 years to become, to have tenure, not tenure, but to have like a position where they can't fire you.
Seniority or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And in 5 months, he went through and he made me, cause every year I would have never known where my job would be. And he decided that he really wanted to keep me. And in 5 months, he offered me the contract and he said, don't ever worry about a job. We've already seen what you can do, and now we've made you tenure. So I got tenure in 5 months, And because I was the only male teacher, the only male teacher in that school at that time. There was another fifth grade teacher, but he was about to retire. But I was the only male teacher, and I was the only, you know, black teacher at the school. So he really wanted to keep me, and, you know, and he really molded me into the educator that I'm today. So Mr. Halloran was a wonderful man, and he really gave me my first chance. And I'm so thankful for him for that.
Now, did you talk to everybody like that would come into the restaurant? So he was just one other person?
He was just one of the about me is I'm a conversationalist. I love to talk to people, and I love, you know, when people come in, you know, I just want to know where people come from. What do they do? And I welcome them, and I was pulling out his chair for him. And then, you know, he just looked at me, and it was like, it was the whole experience was like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We made a connection, and he was like, where did you go to school? You know, and then that's how the whole conversation started.
So how did you get into, I mean, you said they're progressive, like the social emotional learning part.
Hey, Matt.
Come across that. Yeah.
One of the things that I pride myself in is building relationship with kids. I think that classroom management is my jam. Classroom management, and I think classroom management stems from the relationship that you have with kids. And I've always done it, but there was never like, we, you know, in the olden days, they used to have what's called open circle. So I started with open circle, and then I learned a lot from open circle that gave me some tools to use so I can build relationship with kids. But a lot of the things that I've basically learned about social and emotional learning, these are the things that I wish that my teachers did when I was in school. Mm-hmm. My elementary years were not my favorite years in school because I felt like I was not seen. Nobody knew who I was. Not only I had a lot that was going on being a foreigner. Coming to this country at the age that I was struggling with a lot, and no teachers actually took time to get to know who I was and to get to know my family and my background and what. So I've always, that's the reason why I decided to go into teaching. I said to myself, if I go into teaching, I'm going to build relationship with these kids where they're going to know, where they're going to know that I care, and they're going to know that I know them on a personal level. And when I'm there, I am there with them. So it was not until like 5 years ago, they were offering a workshop on social and emotional learning that I really got involved in. And then I became, and then I started doing research, finding out what's online. And then I accidentally fell on Kokori. And I use some of the tools that they had. And then when I noticed that several years ago that they had an opportunity to look for teachers, to try their platform, I jumped on the chance because I was already doing some of the things, but I felt that, they already had the curriculum prepared and it was easy to implement. So that's how I get involved with social and emotional learning.
And now I think we could take our commercial break. And then when we come back, we'll get the rest of the story. All right.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked. Drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
All right. I mean, I knew a girl who was a teacher, and she would say, you know, some kids just have a bad rep. They have bad behavior. They're bad. And I remember when I was asking Kendra, you know, can Corey help with those kids? She said, absolutely. The reason why they're bad is because they're dysregulated. That's a new word I've learned. Yes. And they, so when they're, tell me if I'm, they can't get up to the cortex, because the cortex is where you learn, because they're stuck in the fight or flight, or they're stuck in, you know, something else. And Kikori has them based on the play switch, so that now they can learn because they're in the right part of their brain. Is that, did I explain it correctly?
You did.
Sort of.
Yes. Yes, you did. And another thing too is that a lot of the time kids misbehave because they're looking for attention and they're looking for an opportunity to express themselves. Most of the kids that I notice who are having problems with dysregulation, it's because they don't feel like they're seen. And, you know, through the activities, they learn that they are part of a community. And what's great about it is that they also learn the value of, to be part of a community, you have to share, but also you have to listen. In order to participate, you really have to learn how to monitor yourself so that everyone can enjoy the play. It's not just about you. It's about making sure that everyone in the classroom are having a good time. And then, you know, you ask them, if you have to teach them, and you have, and it takes, it's not a painful process, but you have to be very direct with your approach. And at the beginning of the year, you have to spend a lot of time building relationship with these kids and talking to them. And then finding out why, you know, a lot of the reason why is that nobody ever asked them, like, why do you feel that way? Like, tell me when you, why do you feel dysregulated? And kids will tell you. And then you have to give them an avenue by which, whenever you feel this way, these are the things that you can do. Here's 1, 2, 3. Learn how to regulate it and step away. And then you have these choices. So when they know they have choices, they know you are teaching them how to regulate themselves. You're not, you know, you said, what can you do? What are the choices that you have? What would, you know, right now, your body, you are being dysregulated. What are the choices that you have? Which choice are you going to pick? You're going to pick 1, 2, or 3. And not only that, you have to give them the space. You have to give them the, you have to give them the avenue, and you have to teach it to them on where they can, so they can learn. So whenever I have kids who are dysregulated, I said, you have, 1, you can go in a quiet area and calm your body down. 2, you can go for a quick walk with a timer. 3, you can go in the hallway and you can do some movements to help you regulate. And then after that, I want you to come back. And I want you to come back and be part of the group, because we really want to hear your thoughts, your opinion. But when you're dysregulated, you're impacting all of us, and that's not fair. And you do it with a gentle voice. And when you teach it, kids get it.
So what is an example of, like, do kids actually know, oh, I'm dysregulated? Are they aware of that?
When their body's out of control, they know that.
And what does that look like? Like on the court? How
crawling on the floor, or raising their voice when we are talking in a group, not speaking out of turns when they know that you're supposed to raise your hand if you have something to share. So they do know. And when that happens, as a teacher, you know, you basically, I'm feeling that there are some people who are being dysregulated right now. And we've talked about some ways that you can regulate yourself.
You actually use that word.
Yeah. What are some of the, which choice would you like, so that you can come back and join us? Because we want you to be part of the group. And then the person would be like, okay, I'm going to take choice 1. And then they go. 2 minutes, come back. But that's something that you have to teach, and you have to model. And it takes a lot of, the first 2 weeks of school is when I really believe as an educator that the first 2 weeks of school, you have to spend time with kids and you have to teach them what you want to see. And it takes a lot of effort, but if you do it the first 2 weeks of school, you're not going to have any difficulties throughout the year.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even know that word till I started talking to Kokori people. You know what I mean? Like, but the fact that kids, well, obviously you're teaching them, you're taking the 2 weeks of school to teach them, but that they can recognize it, that's a huge awareness.
And that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. Kids know when they're not, when their body is dysregulated. They know. But a lot of them don't know what to do with it because they've never been taught. They've never been taught, like, what do I do? You know, it's like an adult. When you know that you are angry, there are things that you can do. And we learn that as an adult. But a lot of kids don't know. They feel like they have to. But they don't understand that being part of a community also, too, you have some responsibilities. And it's not just about you. If you want, you know, you are welcome in this community. And in order for you to be part of this community, we all need to follow the same rule. And we're going to encourage you and we're going to be there for you. But there's also some responsibilities that you have but you got to provide them with the tools, like, you know, but the way that you provide with these tools too is that you have to know the kids. Like, you have to know what makes them tick. There are some kids, you know, if you give them a bear, they can hug the bear. And if they're angry, they can hold on to that bear and then come back. There are some kids that just need to move. There are some, you know, specifically boys that just need an opportunity to move and get themselves regulated. So, you know, I have a hallway where I have like a list. You can do push-ups. You can do jumping jacks. You can, you know, you can walk in a circle. And I have like finger exercises that you can do. Whatever part of your body that you feel that is out of control, you have. So you, if you know the kids in your classroom, you'd be like, number two would be a great area for you to go to and to so that you can regulate yourself. So you have to know your kids. And the way you do that is by having conversations with them, by spending time with them, by playing outside with them, by having a lunch with them. And I think it's very important that you know your kids and you know the tools that you can use to effectively help them regulate themselves.
Well, it seems like you're also letting them know that they have value, that they're a valued part of the community. They're not just, oh, here's a dysregulated one, throwing them away, which I think, you know, from what I heard from my friend, they're just bad.
That's just
it's labeled as bad. And
this is what I saw when I was a young man. When I saw that I did not want to be labeled as bad, so I just kept my mouth closed and I just didn't say anything in the classroom. I was afraid to take chances because I saw how those kids were being treated, and I never wanted to be, you know, and I never wanted to be labeled as bad. I wanted to be one of those good kids. But because of that, it also, I went into a shell where I couldn't share my thoughts and opinions, where I didn't feel that I had anything to contribute to the group. And I feel that is very important for you, as a student and as a child, to feel like you are part of the community, that you are celebrated, that people know who you are and people listen to you. And these conversation topics, you know, where like when you are talking, when you are greeting each other, when you say, good morning, George, and George says, good morning, how you doing today? I'm great. How are you? I am doing well. And then you give him the question, what is your favorite, you know, ice cream? And, you know, oh, my favorite ice cream is vanilla. Why? Because I love the taste of vanilla. Oh, thank you for sharing. Thank you for listening. These are conversations. So when you teach kids this conversation, everyone in the group is listening to that conversation. And then they choose another person to say good morning to. And when you are part of that group and everybody's listening to you and you feel like people care about what you have to say, it's a whole different dynamic. It's a place where you want to be because you are seen, you are heard, and what you say is important. And everyone in the classroom is important. And that these are the tools that Kokori gives you so that you're able to have these conversations.
Wow. We need to take our break. I just want to ask, can't help myself. How many teachers do you think are aware of this? I mean, is this like common knowledge? I feel like you're special.
No, there's nothing special about me. I think that what is unique about me is that is that I understand children. And I knew that when I was in elementary school, everything that I didn't see in elementary school, I wanted to implement in my classroom. Because not only for these kids, I want to have a good time as a teacher. I don't want to be frustrated. I don't want to be yelling and raising my voice to students. I want this to be a community where we are having fun and where we are learning and where we are taking chances, where you feel like you're building a sense of resiliency. And these are the things that was missing from me in elementary school. So that's the reason why I really took it upon myself to read books so that I can get better and better as an educator. And any tools that are available out there that could help me meet the needs of the kids is what I do as an educator. But a lot of the things too is from years of experience and from making mistakes. A lot of people, they make mistakes and they don't learn from it. Me, I'm the type of educator at the end of the year, I make a list of everything that went right and everything that did not go right. And I put together a plan on how I'm going to make sure that next year that those things that happen doesn't happen again. And because to me is that I want to grow as an educator. And if I'm not growing, then it's time for me to retire. But I think it takes work, and it takes also, you have to have an open mind where you don't feel like you know everything yet. And I'm a reader. I'm always reading about people's experiences, and I love visiting other people's classrooms. If I see that they're doing something right and I'm not doing it in my classroom, I'm implementing that. And one of the things that I've enjoyed is that too, because I've been doing this for a long time, I have student teachers that come into my classroom. So these student teachers bring a wealth of ideas, new ideas, and they're also too, I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. And one of the main things that they always say is that we learn theory in college, but we not learn how to practically use these theories effectively in the classroom. And that's why I love mentoring to new teachers, because they're seeing the day-to-day experiences on how not only to teach kids to get along, but also how to deliver the curriculum so that you can help kids feel good about their learning, even though they're struggling. And I think that takes a lot of practice, and that takes of deliberate instruction. And also it takes a lot of patience.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. You have to be a reflective teacher. And I think that a lot of teachers are not very reflective. And you know, they're like, oh, I'm done with the work. Got to do it again. But me, I'm a reflective teacher, and I try to learn from my mistakes, and I want to be better. And if you have that reflective approach towards the job, you will always grow.
Yeah.
This job is, you know, to me, it's not a job. It's a calling. And that's what you look at it. If it's your calling, and if it's something that you love, and if your job is very important, you know, what other job could you say? Like, as a lawyer, would I have 15 other lawyers who wants to be lawyers like me? I don't think so. I've had 15 of my students who are now teachers, and they've told me it's because they want to be a teacher like me. What other job gives you that opportunity? No.
Wow.
So what you do and the way that you treat your students and the way that you make them feel, and if they see it in your classroom, that is something that they want to do themselves, that joy and that enthusiasm and that experience. They want to bring it to other students. So I feel privileged to have, you know, to be a teacher, but I also know that I am preparing, I'm preparing learners, future, and people who are going to be wonderful citizens. And that's why I love what I do, because in elementary school, this is where you put the foundation. If kids don't learn how to love learning, how to get along, how to listen, and how to be advocate for themselves, and how to control their emotion and express themselves in a way so that people can listen to you. If you can teach them these gifts, these are gifts that they're going to use until middle and high school and college and beyond. And I feel that elementary teachers are so important, because you are building the foundation to build that beautiful mansion, that house that you want them to have after they're done with high school. And if you do it well, if you don't do it well, and you don't deliberately do it well, they're going to struggle.
All right.
The struggle.
All right.
All right.
We have to take our break. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, thank you, as always, to our sponsor. And we're going to welcome back Anderson. He's just a brilliant, brilliant like teacher. Like you said, this is your calling.
It is my calling.
No. And I wish there were more people like that, or I wish you could have a huger impact on the next generation. I don't know how you would do that, but maybe through Kikori, maybe by getting Kikori out to more people. What do you think about that?
I think that we, as teachers, one of the things is that I was never involved for the first 22 years of my teaching. I was never involved on social media, on platform, on, you know, sharing my knowledge, because I didn't think that what I was doing was special. And then one of my friends came to my classroom, a lawyer. I invited him as one of my guests, mm-hmm. and he goes, you know, he spent 1 hour in the classroom, and he was like, wow, you do more than teaching here. You are teaching these kids how to be effective citizens in the classroom. You know, there are many teachers who are not doing that. You should share it with other people. And I said, no, I do what I do. And he goes, you have knowledge to share. And then one of my principal who, who has left, invited me. He's like, listen, the things that you do in your classroom, I want to. He moved to another district in Worcester. And he goes, I'm starting this. Of course, he tried to recruit me to work as a headmaster for him. And I said, no, I'm not ready to do that. He goes, what can I do? How can I use what you're doing in the classroom? And I said, well, I can do some consulting. So I've been doing consulting with him and working with new teachers and sharing my knowledge with them. And I think that, and also too, one thing that I saw was one of my friends showed me a TikTok online, and they were showing me this teacher who was talking about some of the difficulties that she was having in the classroom and how her kids told her that they hated her and things like that. And she's like, I love teaching, but I'm having such a hard time that I'm leaving the profession. And I felt sad because no one was willing to help her. So I decided that, you know what? Maybe it is time. So ever since then, I've started doing positive message for teachers on TikTok daily. I started doing a classroom management podcast once a week. And I feel like there's so much that I've learned that I want to share. And to me, it's not about, you know, I don't care about, you know, becoming, an influencer. No, I want teachers to understand that the job that we have is very important. And without good teachers, our students are going to start hating learning. And I don't want that. I want teachers to feel good about what they're doing. I want them to learn effective tools. And I also want them to learn how to manage life and teaching and how I do it. And if I could be an example, and if I could give them some suggestion, and if I could be that positive spirit that helps them get through the day, this is what I'm going to do. So that's how I started mentoring, and I started consulting. I started writing articles on LinkedIn, sharing my thoughts and opinion. And I never used to do that before, but a friend of mine encouraged me. And ever since then, I've been just like sharing and sharing and sharing. Because I feel like, you know, in a long time in our society, we looked as, I don't consider me and myself an elder yet, but, you know, we used to look towards our elders to help us navigate whatever we did as a parent, as a teacher, even as people in the Senate. There was always an elder there to ask for suggestions, to have for help. And I feel like today, people are so afraid to be vulnerable and ask for help. It's the reason why I feel that our society has become the way that it is, because everybody's trying to do it all on their own. And then when they fail, they just run. And all you have to do is ask for help. And there are people who are there to guide you. Well, you know, I always say, you know, the way that I made it through college as a foreign kid, I always ask for help. I swallow my pride and I ask for help. And one thing that I found out is that 8 out of 10 people are willing to help you. That's how I made it through college, because all of those kids that I went to college with, they came from the best schools and they came from private schools. I grew up in the inner city in Boston. The knowledge base that I have was completely different from the knowledge base that these kids had. And I felt myself feeling inferior. But instead of saying to myself, you know what, this is not my place to be, I said, what can I do? Look at all these people who are here to help you. You know, why don't you ask for help? And that's what I did. Wow. And I asked for help, and professors were willing to help me because they saw that I care and I wanted to get better. Friends, college mates, they all wanted to help me succeed because I made myself vulnerable. And that's the thing to teach our kids, is that if you can't do something, don't just give up and bang your head. You have 17, 19 people who are here to help you. And that's the reason why there's a strategy that you can learn that can help you be better as a learner. So it's okay to ask for help. So teaching kids how to swallow their pride and ask for help and to take chances is one of the key things that I feel that they have to learn as people. And there are always people who are there to help you. You just have to ask. So that's how I've made it. And that's what I teach my kids. Learn to help each other, because I'm one person and there are 19 of you. And sometimes I cannot ask your question because I'm working with someone else. But if I can teach them how to help each other by not giving them the answer, but teach them the strategy that they're using. And I feel that if you do that, that's how you build a sense of community, because they're like, oh, I have 18 friends who are there to help me. And we're learning together and growing together. So that's all about classroom management and building a classroom environment where everybody feels like, you know, there's no dummy in my class. You are all brilliant. Some of you are brilliant in some areas, and some of you need a little help to become brilliant. But by working together, we can all be brilliant. And that's the message.
So it seems like, you know, in some places people would be competitive, or, you know, you're an idiot, or, you know, insult people and stuff. It seems like, if I'm correct, that you're fostering a culture of equality.
Yes.
We're all great.
Yes.
No getting better. There's no, you know.
But you have to.
They want to help each other. I mean, that's not normal from what I can see in the real world, you know, out at work. You know, you're always competing with someone else, or this one's, you know, this one's great. And, it just seems like such a healthy.
But the thing about it is that all the great examples are right there for us. And a lot of teachers don't bring them into the classroom. And it's common sense. You know what I mean? Common sense, you know, when a child feels like they can't do something, you know, and they put their heads down. It is, you know, it's like when you, as an adult, feel frustrated about something, you go to your friends or a member of your family to help you out. And in the classroom, you have to do the exact same thing. You have to be able to encourage kids that they have that ability, that they have that all they need to do is reach out to each other. But also, you have to teach them how to do that.
Yeah.
And you have to model it. And you have to, You know, every time I'm teaching, like when they're reading buddies, I teach them how to be a reading buddy. When they're writing buddies, I teach them how to be a good writing buddy by showing them how. Wow. And I think it's all about I show.
Yeah.
And then I do, you do. But don't just say, go out there and do it, and they don't know what to do.
Right.
You have to teach them step by step. And that takes a lot of patience. But if you do it, you won't have to worry about it for the rest of the year because they got it.
Successful people are willing to invest the time in ahead of time to make it easier later. And unsuccessful people, they want to get to it fast, but they don't build in the structure. Do you know what I mean?
But you know what the problem is that too, I think that teachers feel a lot of pressure because they have this curriculum guide that they have to follow, and there's this pacing guide. And the thing about it is that a lot of the time, the pacing guides that they give you, a lot of them, they don't realize that if your kids are not there yet, it's okay for you to slow down a little bit and get them there. Mm. But if you build a resiliency in kids and you build a classroom environment where they are helping each other, where they're working in groups, and where they are teaching each other the strategies that works for them, and you teach them how to do that, at the beginning, you don't have to worry about the pacing because the kids are feeling good. They're helping each other, and you have a classroom and a well or a machine, and the pacing you'll catch up, and the kids get there. But a lot of teachers feel that pressure that, oh, they don't know each other. I have to move on. And what's the
right? Thank you so much. All right,
it was my pleasure.
Yes, we're kind of out of time. Any last three words you want to leave people with?
I want to people to know that there are many tools that are available out there. And Kokori is a tool that can help you be an effective teacher. And also, it's building a classroom community where every child feels seen, where every child can learn how to cooperatively work together. And there are many ways that you can use it in science, social studies, math. And it's very diverse, and It's a full curriculum. So if you're looking for an opportunity to implement something that's going to make teaching fun, Kokori is the app for you. And everything is already done. All you have to do is use your wonderful personality and make it come alive.
Mm, thank you so much.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to, and it was great to be on your platform. And I'm looking forward, to reading and to follow you and to follow your podcast. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, take a moment to reflect, share, or simply be with what you heard. Until next time, this is Hillary Burns, inviting you to stay curious, stay connected, and keep getting real.